What was it about the 90s that made movies so much better? How much of an impact did they make during that decade? And while we're at it, can we throw around some 90s slang? Join me, Jason Soto, a lover of all things 90s, as I do a deep dive into cinema from the best era ever. Rabbit Hole Podcasts present That's the Bomb, Yo! 90 Hella Rad Movies from the 90s. You can find this show on Anchor, Apple, Google, anywhere you get podcasts from, or its home location at rabbitholepodcasts.com. And who knows? Maybe even Alicia Silverstone will finally accept my date.
Oh, I'm F.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Top 5 A through Z. I am your temporary host, who's usually here, and producer guy, Jason Soto. Hello. Our usual host, Bill Zaney, could not come by today. He had a little emergency he had to go take care of. But he will be back for the next episode. Don't worry about that. But I do have his list, so I will be going through his list. But until then, let me introduce my co-host, Rob Pete. Hello, guys. How are you?
What's going on, Jason?
And then let's introduce our awesome guest. She is a Rabbit Hole regular. That sounded a little weird.
That was beyond PG-13 right there.
She's a Rabbit Hole podcaster. How about that?
There you go. I'm not a regular. I'm an actual podcaster. I'm like, I've been demoted.
Well, the word hole and regular just didn't go together. I didn't even say anything wrong. Anywho,
wine.
I have beer and vodka.
That's a lot.
She is the co-host of Whatever with Jason Soto between the scares, and she hosts her own podcast with her brother Mark called The Siblist, which all of those you can find over at rabbitholepodcast.com. Please give it up for Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the madness that is the Top 5 A through Z show. This is going to be unlike any show you've ever done before.
It is.
So before we start, this is Lisa's second time of me going through this, but we're going to do this. Hey, there's an app you should download. It's called RunPee. Awesome app. You need to download it. And what this does, if you're not familiar with this app, it's free to download. It's good if you have Android or iOS. And what it does is when you go to the movies, and let's say during the middle of, The Batman that's coming out next week that I will be seeing. It's a 3-hour movie, so inevitably you're going to have to go to the bathroom. So you're going to bring that up on the app.
Challenge accepted.
You're going to bring that up on the app, and the app's going to tell you, hey, during like minute 28 of the movie, not a whole lot's happening. That's a good time to go run to the bathroom, go get a refill, go get a snack, go do something for like 3 minutes. The app's going to tell you what you missed, and then it'll count down to when this pee time ends. And, I just thought about it. I'm so worried about offending this app that I just realized their whole model of business involves urination. So anything I could say is tame in comparison to the things that they do. So I don't know why I'm so worried. I don't know why I'm so worried about upsetting these people. So anyway, it's a cool app.
It's nice to be polite to people.
It's Jeremy, overrated.
If you're in, you know.
I was told it's the best app to use if you have to go and drain the main vein.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it is free to download. There is some content in the app you don't have to buy, but you can buy. And it's
subscribe.
Like 99 cents. It's like 99 cents. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool, and they have been pretty nice. They've been retweeting all of the Rabbit Hole shows, and we are very appreciative of them. And I'm trying to get them onto some show. I haven't figured out which show yet, but they'll be on something at some point in the future. So I think that'd be pretty neat. Anywho, RunPee, that's the name of the app. Go download it today. All right. Today, we are doing our top five movies that begin with the letter V. We are getting towards the end of the alphabet, people. This is getting crunch time here. I realized when I was going through all the movies that begin with V, there's not a lot of movies that I've watched that begin with the letter V. So this was very hard for me to put together. Bill's list looks interesting.
It's really easy if you're a connoisseur of, you know, films from overseas.
True. There were a lot of foreign movies that begin with V.
A lot of Japanese films that start with V, you know.
Yeah.
If you're a virtuoso of vehicles, you know what you do with V.
I did not have virtuoso on my list. With that said, I like to have our guests go first. So, Lisa, floor is yours. What's your number five of V movie?
Age Before Beauty, Lisa.
I'm sorry. I didn't say that. I didn't say it. I didn't say it. I'm clear to this.
That is okay. My number five V movie is Virtuosity.
Okay.
Because you cannot beat Russell Crowe in an electric blue suit.
What about Idris Elba? Whatever his name is.
Denzel?
No, Idris.
Idris Elba. Oh. Yeah, if Idris Elba wants to show up in an electric blue suit, I'm in. Yes.
All
that
right.
is a fabulous situation. It's funny because I've been talking about movies from 1995 all week. This is from 1995.
Oh, yeah. There you go. What a tie-in.
It's such a fun, silly movie. You know, you're dealing with the serial killer angle, you're dealing with the virtual reality angle, you're dealing with bad CGI. I mean, it's just, I feel like it's a forgotten gem from the middle of that decade. And, you know, before we all really knew who Russell Crowe was, I mean, this was early on because what, LA Confidential was a big breakout for him in 97?
Yeah, that sounds right.
You know, and this is before we start getting to Gladiator and that kind of stuff. So this was hey, here's this guy in this really cool suit playing up against Denzel, whom we already all knew. And it was just this fun kind of sci-fi thing. And so it's just you look at a list that begins with V and I'm like, yeah, this is going to be on there because it's just a fun movie.
I don't think I've seen this.
No.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen this.
Oh, Jason, you'd get such a kick out of it.
Okay, I'll check it out.
It's been a while since I've seen this, but the one thing I remember, the greatest thing I remember about this is that Russell Crowe played like an almost fatherly Max Headroom, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like his demeanor, his characteristics were all just very stoic of Max Headroom. And I'm like, oh my God. Sorry. Yeah.
But he was very slick. You know, like he was charming. It was just, it was so entertaining.
Pure virtual panty dropper, yes.
Sure.
All right. Anything else, Lisa?
No.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, I've not seen it, so I will have to check that out.
That's the way to start off the list, my friend. You start one off that the guy doesn't even know.
I wonder how bad it would be to watch it right now, like in our times, because that was what, 95?
Oh, absolutely going to be bringing this up. And it's like, oh my God, I forgot how much fun this is.
That on HBO?
Is it?
I don't know. I hope
probably
so.
Is.
If not, Showtime.
Hang on, I can look it up right now for you. So while you're looking up or while you're doing your next person, I will get you an answer.
Well, that's me. My number five is actually the answer to the question, what happens if you go to Las Vegas with Christian Slater?
Yeah.
Some very bad things.
Yeah.
Oh. This is my number five, and it is the darkest comedy of all darkest comedies. Probably like the number one darkest comedy I could probably think of. And I know Heather's would also be on that list. Which
that's
also
exactly
has,
what I thought of.
Christian Slater. Interestingly enough, he must like his dark comedies. Yeah, so it's about a movie. It's a movie. It's about these friends. They go to Vegas. One of them, while having sex with a stripper, kills her accidentally. They hide the body in the desert, and then they have to hide the fact they hit a body in the desert, and then hilarity ensues. And I'm just going to leave it at that if you hadn't seen the movie. Like I said, it's a dark comedy, but it is hilarious. And dark and hilarious and dark. I cannot stress enough how dark this movie is.
You're saying it's dark.
It's dark. There's some pretty great performances. Like Daniel Stern is in there. Christian Slater, like I said. This is also it's from 98. John Favreau, Jeremy Piven.
Jeremy Piven, nice.
Yeah.
I've not seen this movie.
Cameron Diaz.
Cameron Diaz, yeah, she plays the wife of, I think, Jon Favreau's character, if I remember correctly. Janine Triplehorn, who I don't think has been seen since the 90s. I wonder where what she's been up to. Yeah, it's very funny.
No, it's not.
are we talking Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas Dark?
No, we're darker.
We're talking like, very bad movie.
Like Donnie Darko. It is not. Like no, it is fun. This is a fun movie. It is very fun. You have to have you have to be able to handle the sense of humor this movie has, because some really fucked up things happen in this movie. There's some crazy shit. Yeah. Well, yes, I've known you for over a year, so technically I have.
I have this sense of humor, and I still hated this movie.
Is it just because it was too depressing, or like what? Like, why didn't you like
Frankly, it? I don't remember. Because I saw it as soon as it came out, because I was working at Blockbuster at the time.
Okay.
And I just walked around for a week, and like people were like, oh, how's Very Bad Things? I'm like, it's a very bad movie.
Oh, Jesus.
You work for Blockbuster Video, too?
Oh, I was an assistant manager. Are you kidding?
Wow.
Loved that job. That is where I belonged. And you know what? I haven't seen it since. So maybe it's worth a rewatch.
Give it a go.
But I hated it. I was so bored.
Are we talking Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag bad?
No, because I enjoyed that.
It's not quite that.
I enjoyed Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag, so I don't know how it would compare.
Actually, I don't even think Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag is like super dark compared to this. It's dark, don't get me wrong, but I think this is even darker.
Yeah.
Fair.
So, anywho, that's my number five, and without spoiling it, that will be coming up again later. So,
apparently,
not so, on my list.
Pete, you're up next. What's your number five?
All right, my number five is an anime from 1985. I didn't think it was this old. I was looking up. I was like, "Holy crap, it is old!"
Oh, it's old, Pete.
Like in the early 2000s, huh?
It's old, Pete. It's old.
Yeah. And it's Vampire Hunter D, and it's about the this 10,000-year-old evil vampire who is like messing around in the area. I'm gonna try to keep this short because you know me, I like keeping things sometimes long. And a half vampire, sort of like Blade, Vampire Hunter D, of course, you know D. He is set out to stop this guy, pretty much, you know. And I'm gonna keep it short like that. Great animation for the time for 1985. One of the few, like, my top five favorite anime movies right there. My other one would be Afro Samurai for my top five, but one of them. But
that is damn good anime.
Yeah, Afro Samurai. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Samuel Jackson. Yeah. But it was re-released in the 90s for Vampire Hunter D, and it was English dub, but it's mainly, of course, Japanese animation, you know. But, I loved every bit of this when I watched it for the first time. An old friend of mine, his name was Jose. He goes, oh, you got to watch it. Never knew about it until he told me. Watched it. I was like, I loved every bit. He goes, you love comic books? Go watch this. So that's my number five is Vampire Hunter D.
I'm not very much into anime, so I definitely have not seen this.
I've seen it, and I'll talk about it because it's on my list too, Pete.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
Okay, then.
I hate when that happens. I hate when my list coincides with somebody else's list.
I think I'm probably going to get a couple that are.
We all probably will do that.
Well, like, I think I was talking to someone off air, like, a little while ago. These later letters are a little difficult because there's very few options. So there's probably going to be a lot of overlap. So it only makes sense.
We joked, Lisa, that X will be nothing but X-Men.
Oh, I've already declared the X-Men show. Like, I'm not even gonna pretend otherwise.
And it was funny because I asked Jason, I said, well, what about like Ex Machina? He's like, no, it begins with E. I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's an E. Yeah.
That's, yeah. X is gonna be difficult.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. So, all right, Rob, you are up.
All right. Number five. So, my number five is a 2010 movie. I'm gonna name off a couple people here. Diedrich Bader and Ken Jeong. We all know who these people are. Very famous comedians. This movie is kind of I'm not going to say it's kind of. It is a spoof off of Twilight.
Oh, Jesus. Are you serious?
It's called Vampires Suck. PG-13.
Oh, my God. We're really scraping the bottom of the barrel.
We're using five. V-Man. Okay, come on.
I have seven without thinking about it on my list.
But no, I actually like, I enjoy the spoof movies. I really got tired of them when they actually like Scary Movie 4 and all this, you know, epic movie, disaster movie, scary movie. But this one was actually kind of funny. You know, it took the spoof of the original Twilight and just played it as like a really shitty version, which actually made it a good movie. Ironically, it has Diedrich Bader in it, who was also in The Spartans, and he was also in Epic Movie. So this is kind of like his third one. It was budgeted for $20 million when it came out, and it grossed $80 million. So apparently, a lot of people like it, Jason.
Yeah, a lot of people like country music. A lot of people paid for
it. It doesn't mean they liked it.
Yeah.
It means they paid to see it once.
Hey, I remember when it came out, I actually saw it twice in the theater because I hate Twilight. So I figured what better way to spend my money than to watch a movie that's ripping the shit off of Twilight.
I'd rather put that money toward a riff tracks for watching Twilight.
Well, has riff tracks done Twilight?
All of them. That's the only way I watched
them. They actually did, yes.
Damn it, I did not know
they
that.
Did.
That's how I got through watching them, because my morbid curiosity, I wanted to see them, but I'm like, I can't take this shit seriously.
I highly recommend the riff tracks versions of Twilight. This is why
Lisa should have been my wife, but never mind. I digress.
Lisa, if you need help with a restraining order, I know people.
Lisa,
I get an Italian cousin who's a cop. So
if you need help with a restraining order, I'll fill it out.
He's so kind.
Name a person? Me. Smiley face.
Name a person? Yes.
All right, let me do Bill's number five here. And I actually got to look it up because it's a movie I've never heard of in my life. I mean, he gave me a little bit of a backstory on it, but other than that, Bill's number five is a movie called Vivarium.
Oh, I've heard. Is this the one with, what's his face?
2019.
Yes. It's got Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah. My favorite actress of all time, Imogen Poots, is in it. Just cause I like saying the name. So this is what Bill says. He said he found it on Amazon. It's available on other streaming services. It's like one long Twilight Zone episode. Very strange and creepy.
Yes, accurate.
And according to Wikipedia, it's a science fiction horror movie.
It's not a horror movie.
Hey, go take it up with Wikipedia. Go take it up with Wikipedia.
Psychological.
I'm just telling you what it says. It says science fiction horror film. And they don't have a short plot synopsis, so I'm not going to read all that. But anywho, I've not heard of this. I don't know anything about it. This is the first time I'm hearing anything about it. Despite the Jesse Eisenberg thing, normally when he shows up and stuff, I hear about it just because he's kind of a big name. But
this wasn't released major. This wasn't a major release. This was a streaming film.
Oh, I found
it. It came out in 2019. I think I watched it during the pandemic.
It says 2019. Again, you got to take it up with Wikipedia. It does...
No, I know that. What I'm saying is, I think it was like made in 2019, but I don't think it was like widely available until
Premiered at the Cannes Film Festival, made in 2019, was released.
Ooh, fancy.
Was released in Ireland in March 2020, and that's all Ooh. It says. It does say the film follows a couple that is forced to care for a child while awaiting release from a seemingly perfect neighborhood.
And they
spelled neighborhood with a U, so I'm guessing this is a British movie. Thank you, Pete. I'm glad you knew that was a joke. Thank you. Everyone else takes me deadly serious for some reason.
Oh, no, I heard the joke. I just didn't think it was funny.
Whatever, Lisa.
Wait, what?
Neighborhood.
Anywho, that's Bill's number 5, Vivarium from 2. I'm just saying it's 2019, and it's a science fiction horror movie, and we're just going to leave it at that.
Yes, so, it's worth a look. It's weird. It's definitely, he's right, that Twilight Zone description is accurate.
Yeah, release date March 27th in the U.S., countries of origin, Ireland, Belgium, and Denmark.
So,
interesting.
We're on number 4s. Lisa, number 4.
My number 4 is The Visit. Shyamalan's return. After Split, which was kind of a little, was it after Split or was it before Split? I have to look. But they both came out around the same. One came after the other. And this brought it back. Like, this movie was so damn fun.
Yeah.
I remember, like, because people had given up on Shyamalan. I'm a Shyamalan fan. Ooh. I made it through a lot more of his movies enjoying his stuff than a lot of people did. My favorite of his is Lady in the Water. And a lot of people are like, yeah, that's where you lost me.
That's my all-time favorite.
Is it really?
Yes. Of his movies, my all-time favorite.
I adore that film.
So, which movie were you asking?
Split.
Split. It came... So, The Visit's 2015. Split was...
Because we're going to be covering 2016. Split.
So Visit was first. So it was the return of Shyamalan. So, I mean, like, he kind of went away after a couple of crap movies. He lost me at The Happening. I never bothered with After Earth. I never saw this Airbender thing.
That's where people said, fuck Shyamalan.
Yeah, people, really turned on him for that one.
Yeah.
I know Airbender is a big thing. I have former students who are, like, crazy for it. I'm unfamiliar with it, so I can't really speak to it, but I know that he didn't do a good job with it. This, hilarious. This edge of found footage, his version of, like, these two kids going to visit their grandparents. This movie is simultaneously creepy as hell. Mm-hmm. And the funniest damn thing you'll see on a weekend. Yeah. This movie was a riot. And I just absolutely adored it. I love a fun movie, and this is fun. And it's also really good. You know, it's hard to creep out a horror fan. And there were things that I was like, ugh. You know, like, you just want to get away from it. It was just so cool.
The thing I remember,
Hansel and Gretel.
That's what I was going to say. The thing that really took upon me in this movie is it. I have to agree with Pete. It's a modern take on Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, grandmother and grandfather, are the witch and, you know, the witches, and the one thing I love about M. Night, Shyamalan,
you got it,
is the way he uses colors and tones throughout his entire movie to set stages, and that's what creeped me out about this movie the most, because it was just so, like, I want to say, like, his entire thing was, let's just take beige to a new fucked up level.
Right. And just the simplicity about so much of these things that you're just like, nope, 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 nope. And a certain moment toward the end where the whole theater went, no, he's not. No, no, he's not. Oh, he did. You know, it's amazing. Get a whole group of people to react to your film. It means you've done something right. So that's my number 4. P.S. Virtuosity is available on Paramount. You can also get it through Canopy or on Pluto with ads.
Ooh. Oh, nice.
Okay.
So Canopy is with your library card.
We'll keep that in mind. Because I do have Paramount Plus. So
there you go.
I will keep that in mind. My number four is a tie, and it's a tie of two movies that are in the same series, because I honestly could not pick which one I liked better. I actually think I like both equally. And I do want to stress that I think these movies are awesomely bad. I don't think they're great by any means, but they are a lot of fun to watch, and they're really goofy. And that is Venom and Venom Let There Be Carnage.
I almost had this on my list.
I was going to squawk at you about the tie, but now I understand what you've done, so that's fair.
Yeah, because they're both equal in my mind. They both feel the same.
And super fun.
And they're great. They're funny. And Tom Hardy is just fucking amazing in both movies.
So good.
I like him in both movies. So I really couldn't pick which one was better. So I just went ahead and just put them both in the same slot here. It's a comic book movie. I probably don't got to spend a whole lot of time about it. It's a movie adaptation of Venom, who is in the Spider-Man universe. We follow Eddie Brock, who's played by Ted Hardy. He's a newspaper reporter, a struggling newspaper reporter, and he gets this symbiote into him, whose name is Venom. It's a symbiote from outer space, and it likes to kill and eat people, much to Eddie's chagrin. And then there's a bad guy, and it's a whole comic book thing. You kind of get it. The sequel, Let There Be Carnage, is more of the same. We just follow Woody Harrelson in a really bad wig going around chewing scenery.
Woody Harrelson's good at that, though.
And he becomes Carnage after biting Eddie Brock and getting the symbiote put into him. And then more hilarity ensues. And you want to talk about bad wigs? Michelle Williams in this movie. I don't know what the hell they put on her head, but Jesus Christ, they need to take that off. Anyway, these are just a lot of fun. I'm going to say spoiler alert, just because I got to talk about this for just a minute. So spoiler alert, if you don't want to know anything about the MCU, stop right now for like 2 minutes. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The teeniest connection that they had between this and the MCU and Spider-Man kind of pissed me off. Because at the end of Let There Be Carnage, they had a post-credits scene where he gets transferred to Spider-Man's world, like the Tom Holland. And then it's like, oh shit, I gotta go see Spider-Man, the No Way Home. And then you go see No Way Home, and then he's not even in the fucking thing until like the last credit sequence, and then he just disappears again, and it's like, oh come on! I was hoping
that's setting up for later films, though.
But I was hoping there'd be like this epic showdown with Tom Hardy fighting Tom Holland. I think that would have been amazing.
I think that's coming.
I think I don't know. I think they sent him back, and I don't know, but I was a little upset about that. But besides that,
I was happy that I had seen Carnage before I saw Spider-Man, and I was like, oh good.
Oh yeah, me too.
Confused the hell out of me. Well, because I only saw it like 2 days before, because I didn't see Carnage when it first released. I caught it on DVD or something. I rented it. But I remember being like, oh good, like this is one credit sequence I don't have to call my buddy Mike to explain to me, because I need him to explain everything
in that. So anywho, I'm still gonna pick number four is Venom and Venom Let There Be Carnage, because I like both of those movies. They're a lot of fun, and Tom Hardy is awesome.
Jason, what I like about Carnage is the fact that you got Woody Harrelson, who played Woody Boyd in Cheers, a completely clueless person throughout the entire, God, how many years? 8 years he was on that show, to a guy who's biting people and turning into an evil symbiote. It's like,
have you,
Rob, did you see Natural Born
Killers? I was just about to say that. I was going to say that.
See your Natural Born
Mickey
Natural
Knox, Born, man.
Yeah. Fucking man, that dude was nuts.
Kingpin, the people versus Larry Flint.
Yes.
This dude has got some range. So
he is brilliant. Did you see the first season of True Detective?
Yeah. Oh yeah, he was
good
in that too.
Holy shit, is that show incredible?
Yeah. exactly.
He That's is, if he shows up, you are in for a ride because he yeah. knows what he's doing. And he's very underrated, I think. I don't think people realize he's as good as he is. But then every time he shows up and people go, oh my God, he's so great.
Exactly.
Love him.
I will cry when he dies.
Ow. Yeah, I would too. I would too. Yeah.
Well, that's not going to happen for like 1,000 years. Okay, Pete. What's your number four?
Catchphrase, people. Time. Remember, remember the 5th of November. And you know where I'm going with this. You got V is for Vendetta. Or V for Vendetta. That's what I meant to say. But Hugo Weaving, one of those stars you think like, man, he's a great actor. He should do a lot of great stuff. He should lead a movie. This is the movie right here where you say he did a damn great job leading a movie. He plays both a hero and an antagonist somewhat in this movie. He's starting to, like, he loves starting riots. He loves starting to do all kinds of anarchy stuff, but he's doing it with a purpose. I'm trying to think like, okay, he's like a fascist. I'm looking at my notes here. Fascist, totalitarian regime. I can't even read it right. Sorry about that. He's trying to attempt a revolution. That's what I'm trying to say. Sorry about that. And he has help from Natalie Portman and a bunch of other people in there. I'm trying to keep this short. Like I said, my stories, as you know, are long. So I'm trying to, but it's based off a comic, based off a graphic novel, famous, really good graphic novel. I wish they did a sequel to it, but the way it ends, you really could say it ends really good, but they don't need a sequel. That's it. That's all I'm saying.
I think they could do a sequel to that. That was such an amazing movie.
You know, and that's it. If you made a sequel, it would dilute it. Yeah. It would be not as good.
Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know no reason why the gunpowder treason should never be forgot.
Yeah.
Damn good. Also on my list, you bastard.
Well, somebody took mine already, you bastard. There's a few of them. Like, yeah, God damn you.
I guess this V is a really hard letter, so it's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to happen, you guys. Yeah. All right, Rob.
My number four is kind of an odd one. It's from back in 2015. I'm going to name some names here. Daniel Radcliffe, James McAvoy, and Jessica Brown Findlay. So she might not be known as much, but she was Lady Sybil Crawley in Downton Abbey, and she did the voice of Lenore in Castlevania, the TV series. This movie is another take on the old classic Frankenstein movie. It's called Victor Frankenstein.
Wow. Okay.
So it grossed, it budgeted $65 million, and it grossed only half of it. So James McAvoy plays Dr. Frankenstein, and Daniel Radcliffe is his dynamic duo, you know, Igor. And so they go through, like every other Frankenstein movie, they're trying to build Frankenstein's monster. But what stood out to me about this movie is it was not about Frankenstein's monster. It was about the relationship between Igor and Frankenstein. Because in the beginning, Igor is his natural character. He walks the hump. He's got a hunchback. He's very disfigured. But throughout the entire movie, Victor experiments on him to try to correct his posture, get rid of the hump, make him more human and less monster. And that's exactly what he does. He takes that, his experimentation on Igor, and then applies it to the monster to make the monster human. So I when I saw this, I was like, okay, James McAvoy, X-Men, you know, Daniel Radcliffe, I'm tired of seeing his British ass too. I'll give it a shot. Why the fuck not? You know? And at first I was like, you know, it's getting really, you know, homoerotic, you know, but I was like, oh, I'll keep on going. And in the end, God, I keep on going on about this. I apologize. But in the end, it's once Igor has been basically cured, he tries to make it to where Frankenstein's obsession is no longer what it is. He's trying to like bring his humanity back. So yeah, my number four, Victor Frankenstein.
That was good. That was good.
That was very underrated. I'm sorry. Like, it was budgeted for $65 million.
I've not seen it.
I haven't either.
It was budgeted for $65 million. It only made $34 million. So it barely made half its money. I highly recommend this. It it should have done better, but it wasn't one of those movies that was, you know, like, it wasn't going to be a theater bomb, you know? Like,
I'm going to make a guess. Well, first off, just tell me the year. Don't tell me the month. What year did it come out?
2015.
I'm willing to bet it came out in January of 2015. Did it?
I don't know for sure. It probably did. I'm gonna give a fair assumption that it did.
Because most movies that come out in January just fail miserably.
Yeah, and also,
unless November. It's an Oscar movie. Unless November. It's an Oscar movie.
November. It came out in November.
And it really wasn't advertised a lot, you know? Like it was
I barely remembered it until you maybe remember it right now. I forgot all about it.
It's a good movie. It's really good.
It's interesting because the English teacher over here is getting hung up on the plot because
it kind of has a dual plot to the movie. So on one track, you have the relationship between Victor and Igor and how Victor tries to heal Igor. But then Victor Frankenstein, being the mad scientist that he is, sees that the experimentations he's done on Igor can be applied to something else. Thus creating a second track for another.
So it's just interesting because it's blending the James Whale movie with the original novel then.
Yeah.
Because there is no Igor. There's no Igor in the book. No. That was a 1931 creation. But it looks like it's taking it seriously and it's adapting both. It looks like kind of almost like a prequel, I guess. Yeah. So I'm going to have to give and this a look.
There's a huge, I felt like it was homoerotic in the beginning of it, but there's such a huge loyalty of Igor to try to save Victor's soul because of what Victor did for him. And some of the scenes are gut wrenching. Like the amount of special effects sound they use to make the bones crunch, to make, you know, the disfiguration look real. Like, You just got to grab your man and lady parts and go, ooh.
Yeah. It's interesting because you take it from an analytical point of view. And, you know, Victor was a mess.
That shit fucking crazy.
He was, but he was also he's the male character in the female written Gothic story. So every female in Gothic literature is desperate and pathetic and overwrought emotions, which is why they had the fainting couches. And that's all Victor does through the whole book. You know, I love explaining it to my students and saying Victor Frankenstein can't even through the whole thing. He just cannot handle anything. He's always ill because he's so freaked out. He is a horrible human being. So talking about Igor trying to save his soul, and then this fool just goes off and does it again and does it worse. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to give this a look because it sounds like an interesting take on the story.
It's really interesting because the one thing that stands out is the experimentation. I mean, you see him as you see Igor as this just broken hunchback of a man. Mm-hmm. The special effects are amazing on his art piece, the back piece that he's using. And then in the end, he walks around, there's one point it's Daniel Radcliffe without a shirt, every girl's panties drop. Okay, we get it. But he's also walking, at one point he's standing up in a Victorian style, you know, gentleman's outfit, just standing tall. And it's holy shit, 45 minutes ago, you know, you were screaming Sanctuary, ringing bells, man. What the fuck?
Very cool.
All right, let me do Bill's number four here. It's in the movie I've not heard of ever. According to Wikipedia, it came out in 2020. It is an American psychological thriller. It stars Thomas Jane, Anne Heche, Jason Patrick, and this is called The Vanished.
Oh, is this another remake of The Vanishing?
No, I think this is a Shyamalan movie.
No, this is not
Shyamalan.
The Vanishings. Oh, sorry.
This is apparently about a couple who sets out to find their daughter who disappeared during their camping trip. And Bill says, this is the same stuff as I said on number five, except more of a weird mystery thriller than Twilight Zone. So take that for what it's worth. I've never heard of this in my life.
And this is when, 2020?
2020. If I get a date, August of 2020. So I'm wondering if this was pushed back because not a lot of stuff was being made in 2020, so this was probably filmed in like 2019 and was supposed to be out or something, and then I was like, oh, this little weird thing happened in the world, we can't have movie theaters at the moment. So
do you see who directed this?
Peter
Facinelli. He played as Carlisle in Twilight.
What?
It's a Twilight connection. He plays really? He plays
Dr. Carlisle.
Oh. Okay.
He's in the
Did not know that.
Wait.
Oh my right? god.
Did not know what? That.
He was in Glee, he was in Nurse Jackie, Supergirl, American Odyssey.
He was in a lot of things late 90s.
What
I
was
think.
He he was in something like I remember him for.
Give me a minute. I'll get you there. You got to go back further.
Oh, he's that kid. I know this guy.
Yes.
I know him from Can't Hardly Wait. He was the nerdy
That's
guy.
That's the one. No, he wasn't the nerdy guy.
Was he not the nerdy guy?
No.
Wait. Let me look at him again. Oh, he was the jock guy.
Scorpion King.
Sorry. I looked at a little picture. Now that it's bigger,
right.
I see now. Yes. I see
he
now.
He was in a vampire movie, wasn't he? Other than fucking Twilight.
I don't remember. I mean, he was on a season of Six Feet Under.
He was in a bunch of stuff.
I don't remember vampire.
I know him. I remember him now. He's very.
He was around for a while.
But okay, so he wrote and directed this movie. So there you go.
Interessante.
I know nothing about it. I'm just reading the Wikipedia. The cast is interesting. I mean, Thomas Jane, Anne Heche, Jason Patrick. That's all interesting.
Supergirl. He was in Supergirl. That's where I remember him from. He was a total douche in Supergirl.
I didn't see that. I didn't all watch right. it. I do not know.
Well, that is Bill's number four, so... let us go to number three, Lisa.
We're already at number three. Oh my goodness.
We are.
I would usually take longer, but Jason kept on getting pissed off.
Yes.
That's all right. I just think it's interesting that Pete keeps talking about how verbose he is, and I'm like, here I am.
Oh,
Pete,
go on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm about to in a minute. So
all right. So my number three pick. The attempted resurgence of the disaster movies in the late 90s, 1997's Volcano.
Please don't. Oh,
you
sweet fucking Jesus.
Nice.
Why? Is it on your list, Rob, or do you hate it?
No, I just fucking hate that movie.
Oh, my God.
It was so horrible. It was good.
Oh, my God. I love it. I love a disaster movie. This is where I take after my mother. My mother is all about disaster movies, the stuff from the 70s. So I grew up watching The Poseidon Adventure and Earthquake and The Towering Inferno, all those movies that, you know, came out in the 70s and then they'd be on TV in the late 80s. And we watched all of them. I watched The Poseidon Adventure so many times.
With Gene Hackman?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love that movie.
They're brilliant. It's also like, as a horror fan, not a lot of things scare me, but the one thing that will scare me are those panic scenes when everybody's like flipping out, trying to get out, and they all trample each other. I can't handle that kind of stuff. It makes me nuts. But any of these disaster movies that come out, you had Moonfall recently, San Andreas. Twister is brilliant. That Into the Storm movie, which was stupid. I still loved that.
What was the one with the Day After Tomorrow with Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah. Well, I love watching shit get obliterated.
What was the one with Pierce Brosnan?
Dante's Peak.
Dante's Peak, which came out around the same time.
The same, yeah.
Which is why I love Dante's Peak, but I fucking hate Volcano. I'm sorry. It's
Tommy Lee Jones, though. No. I love Tommy Lee Jones reminds me of my grandfather, so I have a soft spot for Tommy Lee Jones.
Nice.
But, I mean, it's just so much fun. Like, there's just Volcano erupting in the middle of L.A. And it's just like, you know, shit going down and there's lava everywhere. It's just so much fun.
Let it fucking burn.
I love destruction. So you need a movie that begins with V. I give you Volcano. Forget these artsy things like V for Vendetta. No.
So, Lisa, I got a funny story about Tommy Lee Jones. I dated a girl once who had the hots for Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh.
Like panty dropping hot, you know.
Oh.
And the one movie she loved the most by all far of all of Tommy Lee Jones's movies was
I Know Where You're Going.
Space Cowboy. Space Cowboys.
That's why? Not where I thought you were going, but that's amazing.
Why? Because Tommy Lee Jones's naked ass.
Oh, stop it.
Dead serious. She's like, I love the movie. I'm like, why do you love it so much? Tommy Lee Jones, naked ass.
Okay. Uh-oh.
Okay, then.
Everybody's got that thing.
Everybody's got their thing, so yeah.
Wow.
Another reason why I hate Volcano.
Well, his ass isn't in that movie.
I'm not bitter.
Exactly. All right.
Desma pick.
My number three. I have five words for you. Long live the new flesh. And that is a Videodrome.
Yes.
Old school. It's
from 1983, stars James Woods, who unfortunately is an asshole, but we're gonna ignore
from
that.
Rhode Island.
And we're gonna ignore that for now. And I will say that he is good in this movie. And I will
this
just
is a
leave
cool
it at
movie.
I will leave it at that. This was written and directed by David Cronenberg, who, if you know anything about Cronenberg, he likes his body horror.
Yes,
he is fucked up.
He is indeed a messed up individual. His cameo in Jason X is by far the funniest thing I've ever seen on film. And Lisa knows what I'm talking about. I don't know if anyone else does, but Lisa knows what I'm talking about.
I love it.
She giggled. What were we supposed to do after that? Just remain silent. I mean,
anyway, yeah. So it's a very strange movie. I'm just gonna say it right now. It's very, really, really fucking weird. It takes place, like in this weird like world where like TV kind of there's a TV station that shows like snuff films and
America.
James Woods is like this guy who's investigating it. He comes across Deborah Harry, who is yes, that Debbie Harry. It's just a weird movie. I just really not. I mean, it's like trying to explain a David Lynch movie.
It's true.
it's just really fucking weird. There's James Woods' chest opens up and he stores a gun into it. There's things where the TV comes alive. There's a part where James Woods whipping a TV. It's a lot of strangeness. It's very weird, but America. I like it. I like how weird it is. I'm a fan of very weird ass movies, and this is a fucking weird ass movie. You really have to be into very strange movies to kind of even get into this. I can't imagine like a normal moviegoer trying to watch this because they're just gonna not understand what the fuck is going on. But yeah, there you go. I don't got much to say about it because I don't know what to say. So
it's a cult classic.
Barely missed my cut. Was my number six.
Yeah. It's a good movie. I enjoy it. Mm. Number three is Videodrome.
Good old Deborah Harry.
Hmm. Yep. Pete, you are up.
Alrighty. We talked about this movie already, but since I'm an avid comic book person, as you know, I want to run down my pros and cons just really fast about this. Venom. Venom was great in the sense of its own right because it was its own origin story for Venom.
Yep.
Not the proper origin story, but still good story nonetheless. Proper story is where Peter Parker gets the symbiote from in Secret Wars and stuff and everything, gets rid of the symbiote after Bell's knocks the Venom suit off him. And because Eddie Brock having beef with Peter Parker because Peter Parker got him fired from his paper and all this other stuff, that's how he ends up getting the suits at some point, you know, during this story. I forgot. It's been a while since I read the story. But he uses the suit to go up against Peter Parker, all this other stuff. You know the story for that already. So we go to the movie, and the movie is basically using another well-known comic book character at the start, J. Jonah Jameson's son, John Jameson, or something. I forgot Jameson. It's J. Jonah Jameson's son, though, that gets the suit at the beginning of the movie. In space and stuff and everything. Couldn't handle the suit, so it goes off him, ends up, of course, fighting Eddie Brock later on. Eddie Brock, he's sort of the same character like you know in the comic books, but a little different. He's not a tabloid newsletter. I mean, a newsletter, news reporter, but somewhat like a tabloid news reporter. He's a news reporter, gets it. This is where, like I said, there's positive and negatives about that. Like, I love the fact that they changed it up a little bit because the movie was fun. The plot was great. You had Riot, which was one of the villains inside the comics, you know. Which
the other good brothers. Yep.
Yeah. With the Life Foundation stuff and everything and all that. Loved all that stuff. And there's like certain, like Anne Wayne getting the suit, which is Michelle Williams one at one point because she is a She-Venom inside the comics. I love that. You know, it was really good. I loved how they intro the Carnage in the credits. That was great. You know, I'll get back to part two in a bit too, because this part two is not part of my thing, but I will get to that on this thing here. But there's a lot of negatives too, like I said, with it. Venom in the comic books before he became a hero, long before he became a hero, was a villain. Like Jason said, all he wanted to do was eat and
badass eat villain.
Yeah, yeah, really great villain. You know, and I have the books here. That's how I know. That's why I'm doing all this stuff with this stuff. But as it went going through, the Lethal Protector was where he started. Well, before that, 374, 375, Amazing Spider-Man, he started becoming a hero somewhat, you know. And Lethal Protector was where he just started thinking, okay, I'm doing more better as a hero than a villain. And it went on from there. But it still took him a while before he actually became really, really into the hero aspect. This movie, that's the only reason why I had problems with it. I'm like, how come he didn't start with the villain side first? Like, you got to do that. You got to have that villain side. But Sony and Marvel at the time, they didn't have some rights to the original stuff from the comics. So they had to do what they can with the comic book stuff and all that. But I enjoyed it. It was a fun movie. And I know I've talked my ass off here, but like you're I told good. You, that's what I'm good with the comic book stuff. And that's my quick. Oh, yeah. And I forgot to mention even about the Let There Be Carnage since I said that. Clayton Cassidy in the comics was way more brutal than he is inside Let There Be Carnage. He was a serial killer. He maimed people.
True sociopath.
Yes. He maimed people really badly. And he ended up getting the suit from Venom suit, which was a spawn of Venom suit. In the movie, it was the cut on Brock that when he bit Brock that got him the symbiote in him. You know, and I'm thinking like, okay, I like the idea of that. That's interesting. But they pussified, and excuse my, I like Let There Be Carnage, but they pussified, there's no other way of saying it, Carnage.
Made him kind of a bitch, yeah. Cletus.
And Shriek, who's also Shuri, if you did not know that. She played Shuri in Black Panther. Mm-hmm. Letitia Wright. Shriek in the comics, I liked Shriek in Let There Be Carnage because she came close to how she is in the comics. I got pissed off that they didn't do that with Woody Harrelson because they made him like funny, like, you know, funnier than what he is in the comics.
They toned him down a lot.
Yes. Yes. And they did it. Of course, I could see why for the family films, you know, it's the version of it, the family film version of it. But I'm like, you know, it should have been R-rated. It should have been more.
Get their money if it's R-rated.
Yeah.
Oh, they still would have gotten the money. They probably would have gotten more.
Yeah,
money.
But you got to understand. No, I don't think they could have, because when you make it R-rated, I mean, yes, Deadpool. But I think that there's a certain blockade that you put up when you make these Marvel movies R, because the 13-year-old boys want to go with their friends to go see a movie and they can't if it's rated R.
True.
So, I mean, I think you do cut off a certain demographic if you make it R. So, yeah. And granted, I know people are yelling at the radio right now, like Deadpool. No, you're right. But yeah. I don't know that you can do it with all of them. and have it work.
Yeah, you cannot do Deadpool's a PG-13 film. There's never. Just no way.
They tried with the Christmas version, the remake of the second movie, Once Upon a Deadpool, with Fred Savage.
Fred Savage!
Yes.
The only correct Savage.
Yeah. That was still funny, though. That was still great how they did that, even though it was like a direct remake of part two. And just adding dubs in with Fred Savage and stuff.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that was funny as hell. But yeah, so my number three is Venom, mainly. Not part two, but the first one, Venom. It was very fun, very good, I thought, but
could have been
better. So, Pete, let me ask, before I get into...
Mrs. Chan steals the whole movie.
Mrs. Chen's got some brass balls, I will give you that. But let me ask you some questions before I get into my number three, Pete. Because I've always seen Venom as an anti-hero. He's not a hero. Yeah. He never was a hero.
No.
He was a villainous character, but the symbiote itself is not really a true villain. It's just an apex predator.
Yes.
You know, like Kraven the Hunter is a predator, but he's a fucking villain.
Yeah.
Whereas Venom and its spinoff, Carnage, those are just fucking batshit apex predators.
Yes.
My question to you is, Pete, and I want you to be honest with me. Do you think Tom Hardy could have brought up the expectations in Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man? Like, if Tom, like, because who was Topher Grace? Topher Grace played Venom, and that was absolute dog shit. Tom Hardy was in it.
Talking about Topher, that would have been funny if he mentioned something about Topher going, who's this asshole playing me? Or something like that.
Like, if they were watching like the TV and they saw like a version of that, and they're like, and Venom's like, who the fuck is this asshole? I want to bite his head off.
Yeah, like who's this pussy? You know, or something like, you know, like who's
they just Tom Hardy and Venom just look at each other like, really?
Yeah. But
I love that.
You know, that's another thing with the Andrew Garfield thing. They're planning already a movie with Venom and Spider-Man. They're saying that it's either going
to
be...
You got to.
Yeah. They're going to either have Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield, not...
Tom Hardy.
Oh, I would love to have Topher Grace and Tom Hardy be in the same Spider-Man movie. And then fucking, you know, Hardy's Venom look at him and go, who the fuck are you, bitch?
Mm-hmm. And just like beat the shit
and
out
bite his head off.
Bite his head right off. Just fucking take him out. You're like, everybody's okay, yeah. I can see that.
But they're planning where they're going to have Null, if you know who Null is, the god of symbiotes. They're planning to have him in there. They're going to have a whole bunch of stuff. They're going to have Toxin. If you've seen the ending of Let There Be Carnage, the cop in there, he's Toxin.
This is something for Jason and into the MCU.
Yeah, this is for you and Nick.
Yep.
Yeah. So, if you didn't know, that was Toxin at the end of... I mean, that was playing the cop. I mean, that's the character.
Damn, I think Nick told me that when we did.
See, these are the things where it's like, it happens and I need to call my friend Mike. And I go, so Samuel Jackson, dude with the eye patch at the end of Iron Man. I know that's important, but I don't know who the hell he is. So I need to explain it.
What's
up with this eye patch? Tell me about the eye patch. I don't understand. Why does he have an eye patch?
Obviously, you know, you have these after credit scenes and you get somebody like him coming in. But I don't. This is a massive gap in my knowledge. I do not have a comics background at all. So all of these different, like all these names and all, that cop is this guy and this, I don't know any of that shit. So it's like, I watch it and then I see movies and I go, damn it. I want more of that guy. Who's this Crypt Keeper dude? And then Mike tells me it's Ebony Maw. And I go, that's the guy I want more of. Nobody's getting any more of Ebony Maw. I like the weird.
Most definitely not.
You're talking about Samuel Jackson with his version of Nick Fury. That's the ultimate universe of Marvel's Nick Fury. Yeah.
And see, this is all I have to call my friend because I don't know any of this stuff. I take your word for it. I go, okay.
You know, right now I'm kind of having like a vibe of who we are. If we were Big Bang characters, I would obviously be Howard Wolowitz. Lisa, you would be Penny.
Am I Penny or am I Bernadette?
No. Okay. Yeah. You're Bernadette. No. You're Amy Farrah Fowler.
That I'll take. That I think is fair.
Jason is straight up Johnny Galecki. And I don't know. I'm kind of thinking, you know, Pete, I'm kind of thinking you're pulling the Sheldon on us.
This is going to be an insult no matter what.
Hey, how about the guy from the comic book shop?
Okay, yes.
He's irritating, though.
I can't think of his name, but you know what I'm saying.
I was going to say, all the cool ones have been taken. So, Pete, this is going to be an insult no matter what he
what
says.
What is his name? It's
no, I love that show. So
Kevin Sussman. Kevin Sussman. Stewart.
Stewart. Yeah, Stewart.
Yeah, yeah. It was cool in his own way. Yeah. All right, anyway, sorry. I digress there. Let me bring it back to our Vs.
All right, number three, Rob.
Pete already talked about my number. My number three. It's V for Vendetta. Hugo Weaving.
Yeah. That's his Hugo brother.
His brother. Natalie Portman, Stephen Fry, John Hurt. It was budgeted for $54 million and made $132 million. It had the tones of The Truman Show, Beautiful Mind. It was also based on the graphic novel. It was all about, you know, the state-run British society based on the television of the Norse Fire Party, and how Hugo saw this, you know, Hugo's character V saw this as, you know, the worst thing for society to be, you know? And so he, I hate to say it like this, but V gave Natalie Portman's character Munchausen syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Straight up. Like he fucking just mentally tortured her into thinking her life was over. And then at the end brings her back and goes, I apologize for everything I've done to you. By the way, here's 500 pounds of C4. Please go blow shit up.
Are you trying to say Stockholm Syndrome?
Yes, that too.
Yep. Okay. Because Munchausen is a completely, completely different thing. That's where you purposely make your kid. That's where you purposely make your kid sick.
Yeah, that's
so
Gypsy Rose.
Yeah.
What the fuck ever? Gave her syndrome, okay? Come on. Anyway, so yeah, my number three, 2005, V for Vendetta. So what was really interesting to me, it was written by the Wachowskis and directed by James McTeague, but it's like, when you think about a Wachowski film, you know, like the Matrix movies, you know, this, the Matrix, they kind of have like the same theme to them, standing up against the overruling dictatorship of what it is, because in the Matrix it was the machines, in, you know, V it was the Norse Fire Party, and you always have this one character who represents freedom, you know, but they want to cause mayhem, violence, and destruction in order to create freedom. So it's like, V's a fucking hypocrite.
Yeah, hypocrite. You got to read the comic, too, because the comic...
But he has a beautiful voice. I mean, you know.
Well, it's Hugo. It's Hugo Weaving. What do you expect?
Yeah. It's Hugo Weaving. Exactly. Yeah, you know.
He does have a wonderful voice.
You don't hear the motorized wheelchair. No.
No, I don't know. All right. Let me do Bill's number three. And then when you hear his number two, maybe you'll share my frustration. His number three is the 2015 version of Vacation.
That was a good movie.
It was kind of fun. Ed Helms, Christina Applegate, and of course Chevy Chase, Beverly D'Angelo. Chris Hemsworth makes an appearance. I was looking at the cast, like the cameos is crazy.
Oh yeah, did you not see this one either?
No, I don't remember Chris Hemsworth being in it.
Yeah, he plays like the Christie Brinkley role. Like, he's the hot guy as opposed to the hot girl, you know?
Oh, Jesus. Wow.
So, I've not seen this.
This was fun. This was better than I thought it was going to be.
Looking at, the cameos in this is just amazing.
Yeah, they did it right.
You got Charlie Day, you got Tim Heidecker, Nick Kroll, Caitlin Olsen, Michael Pena, Keegan-Michael Key, Norman Reedus, Regina Hall. Like, this is an amazing cast of cameos. But yeah, I've another movie I have not seen. I think the only movie on Bill's list I've seen is his 2 and 1. So just FYI on that. But
they did it well. They weren't disrespectful to the franchise.
Yeah, this was their attempt to reboot it, but have Rusty has the lead instead of Chevy Chase. Yeah. Which I think is interesting. That's kind of a neat idea. I kind of do like that idea. That's a neat idea.
Grew up to be like dad. It's
he
cute.
Ended up being like a moron. Yeah.
Yeah, but and, like, you know, the last true family man, they say in Christmas Vacation.
That's true.
You know, and I gotta say, it's harder to keep your kids engaged when you got cell phones and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like a dumbass. I'm not gonna lie, because I was thinking of National Lampoon's Vacation with Chevy Chase.
Oh,
and I was like, Chris Hemsworth was never in that movie. And then I'm like, oh wait, you're talking about I'm a fucking idiot.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's Rob, just wait a few minutes. Anyway, that's Bill's number three is Vacation, the 2015 version.
Oh, hang on. Okay.
We're going to go to our number twos now. So, Lisa, number two.
My number two is again by Shyamalan. I'm putting The Village at number two. I love this movie. And it's interesting because this is one of the first ones where he really started losing people. And I have been saying since then that they did not advertise this movie well. No. This movie was advertised as a horror movie, and it's not a horror movie. And so I remember seeing it in the theater, and people that I was with and people leaving the theater all bitching about that wasn't scary. That's the terrible movie. I've never seen so bad. Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, none of you have the ability to switch gears when it turns out to be something not you expected. All of a sudden my ability to construct coherent sentences have gone out the window. I don't know if you've noticed my last three or four sentences, but anyway,
I have that effect on women. I'm not going to lie to you. Lisa's face, Lisa's face.
So I love this movie. I love Adrian Brody in this movie. I love Bryce Dallas Howard in this movie. I love Joaquin Phoenix in this movie. Joaquin Phoenix plays a very much against type, I think. He just plays an honorable, good, pure character, whereas he tends to go toward the darker side of things. And I mean, even before Joker. But
another
man
with an amazing spectrum.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, he's incredible. And he's one of the greatest villains on screen in Commodus.
We were just talking about U-Turn last episode.
Yeah.
And his character in there, he's a straight up asshole in that movie. And he's unique. He's very good in that one.
Yeah. He's just so fringe. I think he's so cool. But in this movie, like, he's just, I don't know, my heart
he's
swells with his
soul.
Affection. He really is. And I just think Adrian Brody is outstanding in this movie. I love the kicker at the end. I didn't see it. And I think it's brilliant. Yeah. I had so much fun with that. I think this movie is wonderful. I think it's very underrated. And I blame the advertising. I blame the fact that
people watch
trailers and they expect one thing and they go to a theater and they can't stand it when it's not what they expect. So I absolutely stand behind this movie.
And what movie was that? Because you never said it.
Which one?
The name of the movie. Yeah, you
the
never
village.
Said it.
Yes, I did.
She did.
She did? I must have missed it. I'm sorry.
You were too busy reveling in the fact that I was putting up another Shyamalan movie.
Okay. Yes. Sorry.
That's okay. I listen when you talk. That's fine.
Oh.
Wow.
Burn.
Lisa, right about here, this sharp, daggery pain. You want to pull that fucking knife out?
What's cool is that you're diagonal from me on the layout. So if I do this, it goes right
into the Nice.
I got a question, Lise.
Yes.
For the shows that do the Amish shows now, wouldn't that be something if it ended like that?
It couldn't, though. Wouldn't it be great? But they couldn't because they wouldn't be able to, like, it's already been done.
It was one of the most unique and amazing twists in movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
I love it. I love what he does. I love the way he tells a story.
Have anyone here seen, he's got a show called The Servant. It's on Apple.
Has anyone seen that? Season, most of it.
I have Apple TV and I actually might watch it because the other night I was hanging out with my trivia Jeopardy friends and Carl, who's been on various shows with us on the live streams and stuff, he talks about that show a lot. and his wife Jen, who's also in that group with us, she loves that show. And I was like, I had no idea it even existed.
Yep.
And I looked up a little bit about it, and it actually sounds very intriguing. It sounds very interesting. I didn't look too deep because I think it's one of those like spoilery shows. You don't want to read too much about it.
Exactly.
I just read like a very quick like thing about what it was kind of about. And like his involvement is only like he's a showrunner, and he might have wrote like a couple of episodes, but that's it. He doesn't direct them. He didn't create the show or nothing. Well,
Jason, have you seen Wayward Pines?
No.
Yeah, that's him too.
Really?
Yeah, he produced most of Wayward Pines and directed one episode.
Oh, really?
And it was just phenomenal. Like that and
did he do Hemlock Grove?
I don't think he did, no.
Okay.
I don't think he did.
I'm just blending the two.
He produced another movie I've never seen, which was called Devil, about the elevator.
Oh, that's a good one.
That was a good movie. I quite enjoyed that movie.
I still want to see it. He's such an underrated director and producer, you know, like
Eli Roth did Hemlock Grove.
Wayward Pines kind of also had the same.
I have opinions about Eli Roth.
Eli Roth sucks. I'm
not a fan.
That,
I'm not totally a fan of him.
I was saying, you know, you talked about Servant. Wayward Pines is another show that he was a part of.
Okay, I might have to check that out. That sounds interesting.
Devil is not easily available. You have to rent that one.
Yeah, it's
that's a shame. And people hated Devil when that came out, and I don't know why.
Because with this guy, because of The Sixth Sense, they want the big trick. And then when they go in, and like Lady in the Water, there isn't one. They get all pissed about it.
Well, there kind of was in Devil, little bit.
I think it changed. Like, so there was The Sixth Sense. Then he did Unbreakable. Then he did Signs. So
then
that
he
was
did the
his.
Village, yes.
Then he did a Village. So his trifecta were those three, but people can't naturally dissect those and say, okay, well, Unbreakable is also part of Glass and it's also part of Split.
Yeah, but not until 17 years later.
Right. Right. But The Village, you know, is also its own universe and can also kind of be like, you could kind of merge the universe of Lady in the Water with The Village in its storytelling style.
Exactly. Well, he does a different style of movie.
Every
right
movie.
So Sixth Sense is his horror film. Visit's kind of a horror film, but it's his found footage film. You've got Unbreakable, which is superhero film, which frankly he's kind of ahead of his time because he did
Lady
that
in the Water.
Lady in the Water
was
fantasy.
A super well okay I'll give
that's
you a
that's magical realism.
Which
is, which is why I love it so much. I love an Alice in Wonderland story. I love when you blur the lines between what we don't realize is there and what reality is. Signs is the sci-fi alien movie. And, you know, The Village is the period piece. And I mean,
he took a movie of every genre and just whipped his dick out and just mushroom stamped them.
Pretty much. And then there was The Happening, which, dear God.
We could do a whole episode on End My Shyamalan.
I'd be down for that.
We'll call it the mushroom episode.
Yeah, the mushroom episode.
Okay.
Oh my God. Move on, please.
All right. My number two.
You know people are going to want to see that.
My number two, when it was announced, a trailer came out in 2012 for this movie. I was like, fuck yes, because it combines two of my favorite genres of horror, found footage and anthology. And this is VHS.
I was going to say it.
I love this movie. I was there opening night, opening weekend, and I was just like glued to that screen, and it was wonderful.
I couldn't pick. I couldn't pick which one I liked, so I left them all.
I was gonna ask which. Okay. Yeah.
Well,
the first one.
Just hold up on the second one. But right now I'm talking about the first one. We'll get to the second one. To anyone who doesn't know, this is a found footage anthology movie. The wraparound story is these guys break into this house because they were hired to steal a videotape from the house, and when they get there they see a dead guy in a chair in front of a TV with like 1,000 videotapes around in this room, and then they're like, well, which videotape? We got to watch each one to see which one we're looking for, and then each story ends up being a video on this videotape, And I don't know which one I would say is probably my favorite story. I kind of want to go with the last story, which is just called 10/31/98. It's about these guys who are going to a Halloween party. They go to this house, and the house ends up doing a exorcism, and then we're just going to kind of leave it at that. That's probably my favorite out of all the stories, but all the stories are wonderful. Like, each one's entertaining for different reasons. You got the first one, it's about a demon woman trying to find a guy to mate with. You got this real... Lisa's doing it.
I always think about this chick, like, that whole scene with, like... crazy.
I volunteer for tribute.
Yes. You got this one. It ends up being kind of slow, but it's creepy. It's about this married couple on a honeymoon. This someone keeps breaking into their hotel room at night. And then there's a twist to that I don't want to reveal, but it's an interesting twist.
It was me!
You got this weird, like, slasher story. It takes place in the woods, and the killer can't show up on video, so the video gets all weird. There's this one story that's just it's literally just a woman and a guy just doing a video chat, and it's just all, like, talking stuff, and I don't want to, again, ruin that, but it's all of it is very good. Every story is great. My favorite, I think, has to be the last one with the guys on Halloween. So,
not seen this,
dude. Seriously,
really? Well,
here's the thing. Like, I've seen seen a lot of anthology movies. Like, you know, Tales from the Crypt, Tales from the Hood,
right? The Dark Side.
We did five of them months ago. Did five of them a few months ago.
This is the one I've never been able to get my hands on, you know. But
you have Shudder?
No, I don't. I need to get Shudder. Mm.
Best $5.
That should be another sponsor of us, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my god, I would love that.
I know.
Are you listening to me, Shudder?
I might be able to make it happen if I wheel and deal enough, but I'll consider it.
You could get these from the library, Rob. They're old enough.
Yeah.
I also have these movies.
These are worth your time.
Listen, every time you say you have a movie, you're going
to... Yeah, but then I don't see you for like 4 weeks later, so I always forget.
We forget. Like, hey, what was that movie you're supposed to... I don't remember. Neither do I.
Prime has it.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Prime has it.
Prime has VHS.
And now we know Lisa's phone number.
So
I went to the Dollar Tree over by 118th over here, and I found it over there, and I got it, and I loved it because I learned about it here, and I seen it. I was like, oh, they got it, and I go, man, I just watched it this last year too for the first time.
This was on my anthology list, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So my number two is VHS. I'm gonna pass it off to Pete, and I will be right back.
Okay. Hello. My number two is something that we talked about already. Me and Lisa are going to probably have an argument. I'm messing around, Lisa. That is Very Bad Things.
It's number two.
This is my number two, yes.
Pete's got an interesting taste in movies.
Yeah.
I got to see this thing again.
Yeah. I thought it was, for the type of movie it was uniquely done. It was done great. I mean, with the story, with everything about it. Basically, it's about these friends. They try to do a bachelor type party type thing. They get the stripper, they get the cocaine, they get all this other drugs, alcohol, get all fucked up, get all messed up. And one of them ends up having the sex with the stripper, accidentally killing her. And things start to ensue from there really, really bad. Of course, one of the things that wasn't mentioned earlier, before they got rid of the stripper and everything, the security guard comes into the room, sees the death stripper. One of them ends up stabbing the shit out of the guard. And like Lisa was, I forgot who was talking about. Who was talking, Rob?
I think Jason was.
Jason, yeah. I forgot who was talking about. So anyway, after that, they try to live on with their life after, but they really can't, because that guilty conscience starts kicking in.
They did a very bad thing.
Yeah, no.
End of movie. Yes.
Yeah. And after they dismember and get rid of them, like you know, everybody was saying inside the desert and stuff and everything, one of them starts just losing their mind a little more than everybody else. And it's like, what if we were stuck in that situation? How would we be? Somebody from us would probably end up being like that. Like, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to go tell. The other one's like, no, you can't tell. And the other one's going, I'm going to just kill motherfuckers. That's all. You know, like, that's it. But that it's funny as hell. And then you get Cameron Diaz's character, which we mentioned a little bit. She's the wife. She finds out about this stuff, too. I feel bad for her because even though she's like a bitchy character in that movie, and anybody who's seen it knows she's a bitchy character in that movie. It's probably one of the best
in roles. In all of her movies.
Yeah. She's one of the best roles that she's done for acting wise. Fucking Rob. But anyways, I say it's her best one because she acts it well with so much, like, and all the karma that happens to her for no reason. I mean, there is a reason, but by the end of the movie, you're like, oh crap.
You're making this sound like a really dark version of Four Rooms.
What I didn't say, it's basically the 90s version of The Hangover.
Yeah.
it's like Four Rooms and The Hangover and the baby, and then boom.
Just imagine The Hangover, but a lot darker.
Yeah, like a horror
That's
version.
Basically this movie.
Yeah.
That's basically this movie.
Yeah, I was saying that Cameron Diaz, though, she, you know, nobody mentioned her really much. She was like the bitchy character in there, and she got what she deserved but didn't deserve, like, in the same time, because she wasn't part of the situation. They just put her into it, you know? And you're like this, like, you feel bad, like, oh, God. Like, you know the ending of the movie, you know what I'm talking about, and it's just
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. So, but that's my number three. Very bad thing.
All righty. Rob.
Okay, so for my number two, I have to ask a very serious question to our group here. Are there any stoners? Can you please raise your hand? Thank you. Okay, so my number two is a stoner flick and a kind of a love story, in a manner of speaking. It stars Cal Penn, John Cho, Neil Patrick Harris, Patton Oswalt, Bobby Lee, Danny Trejo, and Pamela Garcia. What a baby in me. It's a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas.
All right.
Okay. Budgeted at $19 million and making $36 million because it's fucking Harold and Kumar, you know? It's the third one. It's after. There's White Castle, you know, Escape from Guantanamo Bay. This takes place 6 years after Guantanamo Bay. You know, John Cho's character has an established life as a very, you know, well thought out banker. Family's coming home, you know, he wants to impress the father-in-law, who is Danny fucking Trejo. You know, anytime, like, if a character like Danny Trejo came into my life, my testicles would go up into my body.
Oh yes.
And they would become ovaries at that time. So we all, you know, if you've not seen it, it was back in 2011. It's, you know, it's a Harold and Kumar film. But it's the Christmas version. It talks about love. It talks about family. It talks about forgiveness. It also has Neil Patrick Harris, who we thought fucking died, you know? So, yeah, I mean, what is there to say about this movie that nobody has not seen it before, you know? I would say if you have your chance of seeing it, the regular version or the 3D, well, I can see the 3D. Please don't do any drugs while you watch the movie, before or after. Because there are some scenes where you... Well, there are some scenes in the movie where you're like, Jesus Christ, this peyote is just kicking my ass.
God.
But I didn't do peyote. So, yeah. My number two, a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas.
Amazing.
And I'm honestly surprised nobody else has said this.
I've actually never seen any of these movies.
For some reason, didn't think about it.
Get the hell out now.
I just always think about the first two. I completely always forget about this
one.
I
get it. I actually think I have one of them on the list of doom. Because I don't want to watch. I'm not a stoner fan. That's not my thing.
It's not like, okay, so you don't.
But I do love those actors. So it's just kind of like, I can respect them. You guys do your things. But the other side of the coin is I am a fiend for Dude, Where's My Car? and I cannot explain why. It should not be funny to me, but I love it.
Dude, Where's My Car is by itself, you know, oh, I mean, my God. That movie by itself is just, it's in its own reality, whereas these three, like, you know, the Harold and Kumar trilogy.
It's its own thing.
It's its own thing. Yeah. I would love to see a fourth movie, but they have kids.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
I would love to see Harold and Kumar parenting.
And Cal Penn has changed so much since then, too. He's become
political.
Government.
Yeah, they're both,
It'd be funny if they switched roles. Like, you know.
I mean, frankly, I don't know that John Cho would be up for it. He's a serious actor, too, and he's outstanding. Yeah. I love
him. Oh, fuck. He made Cowboy Bebop, okay?
The Is one that movie any good? Did? I never got to see it.
I've heard it's fucking phenomenal, but John Cho made fucking Cowboy Bebop. I mean, he would
so
probably
he's down
do
to be. He's down.
Fuck yeah.
The movie about his daughter being missing. I can't think about the movie.
Searching.
Name.
So yeah, good.
Yeah.
And he was it. Now, this is not the kind of thing you would ever expect to hear me say, but the Exorcist TV show that was on Fox.
That was
season
great.
One was better than I expected. Season two had him in it and he was outstanding.
Yes.
Huh. Super good show.
Yeah. Right. I'm surprised it didn't last any longer. That should have been.
Nobody watched it. It was just you and me, Pete.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, nobody watched this.
Yeah,
show.
I had not seen it. I've not
the
seen
revelation
it.
With Gina Davis. The revelation with Gina Davis. That was just the kicker.
They did the scene. They emulated. They homaged the scene where Father Merrin arrived at the McNeil house, and they did it. And I got chills. And I swore at the TV. I'm like, screw you! You're not allowed to get me to have that reaction. But it works.
The girl from the first season that played the one that was possessed. She's a great actress, too. Yeah.
That moment is my single favorite frame in all of cinema. And it was like, ah, you brats, you got me.
Fuck you, TV. Fuck you.
I was mad. I'm like, you're not allowed to get that reaction out of me.
All right. Bill's number two. And you'll see why I had that reaction when I said it's number three. Because it's National Lampoon's Vacation.
Oh, come on, Bill.
He's a host. I can't make comments, but
come
I have
on, Bill. That should have been a tie.
I don't know. He must like, I don't
know.
Well,
technically, National Lampoon, it begins with an N.
That's what I was wondering, but I feel like that would be another the argument.
It's the full title.
So, but it anyway, he's not here to defend himself. I'm just going to.
And it's his show, so who am I?
Yeah. I'm just going to plow through it. It's the original, the 80s version of Chevy Chase.
And it's only number two?
And it's number two. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. It is a classic. I'm going to say that. It is a classic comedy. It's a lot of fun. Probably the best part had to be the whole dead grandma sequence. They had to put her in the top part of the car. They had to drop her off. That just cracks me up. And then the whole visiting cousin Eddie and his family and the my daddy says that I'm the best at French kissing and all that stuff. so many great stuff. Anywho, my number two is Bill's number two. Is National Lampoon's Vacation, and I'm willing to bet we would probably have been an argument right now about the N versus V right now, but he's not here. Maybe he'll defend himself next episode, but regardless, that's what his number two is. That's what he gave me. So, before we do our number ones, I just want to do some really quickly. We don't really do this regularly. I kind of want to give a shout out. Honorable mention to Vertigo. Because
what do you mean honorable mention?
Because it's not on my list. And I just want to give a shout out really quick because it was my mom's like favorite movie. And I was trying to fit it on here very, very badly. We're getting there. And but I just wanted to say really quickly because I didn't know if anyone was gonna have it, but I just wanted to say something really quickly about it. So there we go. So anyway, I'm guessing that's your number one, Lisa.
So steal my thunder, why don't you?
I'm sorry. I had to say something before we continue.
Son of a bitch.
I was trying to honor my mother. Leave me alone.
I mean, I'm amazed it didn't come up yet, and then I'm thinking, oh, they must have it as number one.
Honestly,
it's
Vertigo. I completely forgot about it. I'm not even gonna lie. It's just
when you see my number one, it'll make sense.
No, okay.
What is it? A very Harold and Kumar Christmas?
yes. No.
It's Mel Brooks' Vertigo.
I mean, oh, I do love Mel Brooks. I mean, it's Hitchcock. You know, I adore my Hitchcock. This 1958's Vertigo is one of the perfect movies. Jimmy Stewart is outstanding in it. You have this incredible psychological trip that you go down, this obsession, the tower, and he actually makes you feel that dizziness. He makes you feel that obsession with Kim Novak's character.
We all know
character.
It. We all know that feeling.
I mean, we've all been through this chaos. It's just so, so good. I was going to say, you look up lists, you know, the AFI, the American Film Institute, named Citizen Kane its top 100, its top number one of all of its top 100 films twice. It went through two different lists, 1997 and then 2007. But if you ever see something different, it's usually Vertigo. Oh God, it's so good. So good. Like, it was the first movie that comes to mind for me.
Your mom
has good taste, Jason.
I appreciate that. The reason I didn't put it on my list is because I haven't seen it since I was like a little kid. So I don't remember a lot about it. And I didn't get a chance to rewatch it. But I do have like very fond memories of watching that with my mom. And I remember her really, she was super huge into Alfred Hitchcock. That was like her favorite director.
Big fan, me too.
Every one of his like famous movies she got me into. I can't even think of like, you know, one bad movie he made.
Family
seriously,
Plot.
I can't. The what?
The Trouble with Harry.
Family I love Plot. That movie. No, I love The Trouble with Harry. That is that was in my last episode. That was in
Marnie
my tea
is
episode.
A little I didn't like Marnie.
The thing with Vertigo,
I have not seen Marnie.
The thing with Vertigo is like, if I were to ever watch that again, I would probably have to be stoned to watch that just because just because of the camera angles, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was I was watching something earlier, and it was they were doing jumping out of a plane, and I got fucking vertigo watching that.
I've done that. I fell out of a plane. It was amazing.
Oh wow,
Lisa! I said jump, not fall.
You don't jump.
There's
you
a difference.
You don't jump. You go up in this little two prop thing. You get up there and you're sitting down and the door is here.
Stop. You're giving me vertigo just talking about it.
You just fall.
I have a
you
fear
fall
of
out of the plane. It's amazing.
Wow. So anyway, I'm sorry I stole your thunder. I didn't know if it was going to show up on anyone's list, but I just wanted to mention it. But yeah, I just wanted to mention it for my
brilliant
mom. So.
Film. Brilliant.
So awesome. Awesome pick, Lisa.
Your mom had great taste.
Always.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
But then she had.
I got a
so
big poster of him on my wall in my classroom.
And with that said, Mel Brooks' High Anxiety is fucking amazing as well.
Yes. See.
So, all right. My number one is the sequel to my number two, and I think I do like this better, and that is VHS 2. I like this better only because of the one segment in this, and that's the safe haven segment. It is the longest segment in the movie. It's like it's almost like 45 minutes long. It takes up most of the movie, and it's just simply about this film crew. They go to Indonesia to interview a cult leader, and they talk to the cult leader, and the cult leader's like, yeah, we're trying to, you know,
sounds familiar.
We're trying to raise this monster. It's basically very H.P. Lovecraftian. It's almost like Arkham game or
really.
It's almost like that. Yeah, it's wild.
Love some Lovecraft.
It is wild.
I'm a fan of Cthulhu.
But the other stories are just as good in this as well. Like the first one's about this guy who gets this eye implant and then ends up being, you can record everything. But then he starts seeing ghosts with this eye.
My mind went straight to porn, but then you said ghost. I was like, wait a minute.
Straight to porn?
Okay. I'm sorry.
The guys who made Blair Witch did a story in this.
Really?
Yeah. It's a zombie story. It's basically just a zombie story. But it's actually, I think it's the humorous story in this one, because usually each of these have like a funny story. And I think that one's the funny story. The next kind of funny one is the slumber party alien abduction. which is just an alien abduction, being filmed like a found footage.
I've got to see these
though. Telling you.
All right. See, I'm putting it on you, Rob. You need to remind me next time we see each other to bring these.
See, I have an index card. I wrote them down on this index card.
All right.
All on Pluto.
So you need to tell me, and then I will bring them over. I'm seeing you tomorrow.
They're on Pluto. I mean, yeah, fucking 3 o'clock.
Get them for free.
Fucking morning.
No, you can do on demand on Pluto.
Yeah, I can. Okay. Yeah. At 3 o'clock in the morning.
Anyway, 3 o'clock
well,
in the
when
morning.
When else would you be watching these? Come on.
So anyway, my number one, and I do like it a little bit better than the first movie, is gonna be VHS 2. For reference, I've not seen Viral or 1994 yet.
Yeah.
See, I was gonna ask you about Jason. I'm sorry, go ahead, I'll ask you afterwards.
No, I was just gonna say I just haven't gotten around to him yet.
Is interesting.
I did buy Viral because I figured I like the first two. I gotta like Viral. And then I remember Shudder was like, we made the fourth movie. It is 1994. And I just haven't gotten to it yet. And I do have Shudder.
There's one really solid segment in 94.
Okay. I will check it out. Cause,
the others are good, but the one in 94, there's one in particular that's really well.
All right, I will. I am definitely going to watch this soon. All okay, right, what's so, your question?
Well, so now that we've brought this up, you know, because I was thinking, like, we had our anthology version, our anthology part, but like Paranormal Activity, Paranormal Activity 2, 3, 4, Paranormal Activity 5000, you know?
Yes.
I want to see VHS and VHS 2, but now I'm like, okay, there's VHS 3, there's VHS 1994. Are they, okay, so I guess my question is, are they just as much shit as the Paranormal Activities? Because, you know, no. It's like.
So it's a different, so I, think about it as a vehicle for lesser known horror directors who make short films who can't get their stuff out there otherwise.
Okay. Right. Yeah, no, that's fair. Okay. Because, like, you know? When you start making movies and you're like, number two, number three, number four, you know, like,
yeah,
scary movies.
They're not
two, three, four. You start naming movies after like the third and the fourth. It's like,
I can't speak for the third and fourth in the series, but one and two only share a producer and maybe a writer, but otherwise different people have made all of the stories. Like, it's been all different people.
So they're basically short stories, like VHS 1 through 4.
Oh, yeah. It's a, yeah.
Short
yeah.
stories.
Yes, they're all anthologies.
Okay.
It's an anthology awesome. Story, yeah.
The all right, other
Jason,
thing,
I want
VHS Viral has...
you know what? Fuck it.
Has Benson
Go
and
ahead.
Moorhead.
Mm-hmm.
The guys who did Spiral and... what were the other ones they did? The Endless, and there's one that begins with R. What the hell is it called? Resolution. And if you haven't seen those three movies, you need to look those up because they're good mind screw kinds of movies.
What were they? Resolution?
Resolution, Spiral, and The Endless. And they're all kind of interconnected in a way you don't expect. They did a segment in VHS Viral.
Nice.
So that's
okay.
The third one. So it's like, they're not just these random, if you know your indie horror, there are names you'll recognize. There's people, I don't have the faintest idea, but those guys come up. And the third one, Ty West has been in here. You know, like there's people who
Good.
Know. What
okay. 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 So that,
all right.
That brings my faith back into humanity just a little yes. bit.
Okay.
And one more quick.
I grabbed my copies. I'm going to put them right here. I'm going to see you tomorrow, Rob. I will have these.
All right. Watch. Inside of those two, like, gauges.
Did you check them?
It's like Harold and Kumar in some porn.
Did you check? That's an old Blockbuster muscle memory. If you worked at Blockbuster, you cannot help but as soon as you get a case, you open
pop
up
it and open, check it. See what's
every
in
time.
It.
Every
and
time.
One so random note about this VHS stuff here, and I mentioned it on the anthology episode, with the very first VHS, it spawned a spinoff called Siren. Not the one with the there's a movie called Siren where there's
not
a girl
the
in the
head
lake and the guy falls with her. No, not that one. No, I'm saying there's a spookier version, scarier version, of course, more gore, whatever. Ooh, okay. The girl that was at the party in the first story of VHS, that's the Siren in the Siren spinoff.
Nice.
So just want to let you know.
Very cool.
That was my number one. So we're on Pete.
Yeah. Alrighty. Yeah, number one. If you got one of the all-time greatest horror film directors himself, Wes Craven, with one of the all-time greatest stand-up comedians and comedian actors, Eddie Murphy, into a movie.
No.
Vampire in Brooklyn. Sorry. I love this. It became a cult hit. It didn't make much when it was out, but it's basically, he's Maximilian, or it's his character, and he was exported, imported, whatever like that, on one shipment that they got, and he turns the guy that's there into his help, like his ego or whatever you want to call it, and it's a great movie of sorts with that, because Eddie Murphy has done a lot of serious movies after, but this was like somewhat like his first somewhat serious, even though it was comedy film. And
he was made for that movie.
Huh?
He was made for that movie.
Yeah. And he played like a preacher. He played other stuff just like he did in Night Professor. He had multiple characters in this movie. And those characters, like the characters on the side, was the comic relief. The vampire itself was the darkest character you ever see Eddie Murphy play. And Angela Bassett was the, he had to go find his counterpart, I'm thinking of the Wishmaster. I don't know why I'm saying the Demir.
Yeah, right? Oh.
Yeah, yeah, Demir. Jin was the genie from the Wishmaster.
Yes.
But anyways, I'm thinking of the wrong movie here. But it's a Dampier or Damir or whatever it's called. But he had to find the female equivalent of him that was from his bloodline and all that. And that's who ended up being a cop, which was Angela Bassett's character. Very good, entertaining movie. I'm going to keep it short like the other ones, because the last two that was long. But for Wes Craven doing this, it was a great job with this story, too. It's one of those ones that you don't really think of when you think of Wes Craven. I mean, you do, but...
Right.
Think of other stuff, but this was awesome. If you watch it, you love every bit, and that's my number one.
I keep on forgetting that's a Wes Craven film,
right?
Yeah.
That was my Pete. That was my see. This is why I like Pete. That was my number six. Like
Pete's good people.
Pete has listed three movies similar to what I've liked, and I'm like, I tried my hardest. Damn it, Pete!
You bastard. Me and Lisa on the New Year's thing, we have fun though. That was funny.
Shenanigans.
Yeah.
Even shenanigans.
All of the shenanigans.
That was goofy.
Rob.
All right. My number one was Pete's number whatever. I forgot.
Like,
and
whatever.
I had like half of it, the vodka, so I forgot. It's Vampire Hunter D. This is back in 1985. This is honestly one of the first Japanese animations I ever watched. It intrigued me because D turns out to be he's a vampire hunter, but it's like Pete said, he's Blade. He's a Dampier. He's a half vamp. But what's interesting is his vampire side is his hand. So the entire time, Vampire Hunter D is having this bitch fight with his own hand because his hand is just a sassy asshole.
It's very Evil Dead too.
It is. Yeah. It is very Evil Dead too. You know. I've seen the Japanese version and I've seen the American version. But to kind of expand on what Pete said, this movie was set in the year 2090, so 12090.
Basically, it's vampire Count Magnus, who is this like 10,000-year-old vampire, is basically choosing his next bride. And the father of the bride, you know, this young little girl is like, look, I don't want this to happen. So he recruits Vampire Hunter D to say, please kill Count Magnus, you know. I could not figure out how much it was budgeted for because it's an animation film and it's way back in the 90s. So who the fuck knows? It only made like when it first came out, and it didn't come out to theaters. It came out to like VHS at that time and only grossed about 25 grand. But still, it is a cult classic Japanese animation, a Japanimation as it is called. It was directed by Toyo Ashida and it was written by I don't want to fuck the names up. Hideyuki Kuchichi and Yashi Hirono. I probably fucked them up and I apologize to anybody.
It looks close to me.
That's not bad.
It is very hard to speak Japanese if you're an American. Let's just be honest. But yeah, this was one of the original animations that Japanese animations that I grew up on. And I was watching Japanese animations before they became popular, you know, and this one, like, yeah, I know. Yeah. I was a Japanese hipster, you know, fuck you. Anyway.
You can't get it anywhere though.
It's hard to find. Like it truly, I don't even think it's on DVD. I think it's straight VHS. Okay. Well then Pete, I'm coming to your house.
Well, I can't get it from you, Pete.
I would love to see somebody, and this is, you know, if anybody watches and listens to this, if you're a up-and-coming film director of any type, please do another version of this. But my one request is make it fucking dark. Please don't do some bubblegum bullshit on this movie, because I swear to God, I will come to your house and I will beat you with a baseball bat and peanut butter. And jelly.
Did you see this thing in 2000 called Bloodlust?
Bloodlust was a sequel to it. It wasn't as good because it didn't have the feel as the original, but it was good. It still was good nonetheless. Like if I were to ever do like a tie between movies, it would be Vampire Hunter D and Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust. My problem with Bloodlust is it felt like it was too far past the original to be something of value.
That's fair. I just found it on YouTube.
No, yeah. Oh, fuck. It's on YouTube.
That is the wrong link.
Fuck you, YouTube.
Hey, at least I can see it.
I'm sorry, YouTube overlords. I apologize. Please don't kill me. Anyway, so yeah. my number one, Vampire Hunter D.
That's a great choice, too, because I love the animation. I think the animation was...
Oh, my God. Like, that and Crying Freeman were the first two animes I ever watched, and Crying Freeman, the artwork in Crying Freeman was like this spectrum, and then Vampire Hunter D was this spectrum, but they were still great films. So if you were an anime like lover of any type, you have Crying Freeman, Vampire Hunter D. If you can find a movie in between those two, amazing. If not, you don't deserve to call
yourself. I think Vampire Hunter D was the first anime period I watched. Like that was the first one, and then Bleach right after that.
I mean, I watch Smurfs, you know, so I mean, what do I know? Smurfs.
La, la, la. Okay.
And the Snorks.
And the Snorks.
Yes. All right. Let's do Bill's number one here.
Very excited.
No, because it's going to prove that Lisa is wrong, because this is the third time this has come up tonight. And that is Very Bad Things. So...
I love it.
And you know what, when I was making my list, I was like, I know Very Bad Things is gonna show up on Bill's list because he's the one that told me about it when it came out.
Oh, that's funny.
He was like, you gotta see Very Bad Things, it is an awesome movie. And I was like, all right, cool. So I went to go see it and I was like, yes, that is an awesome movie. Bill says, the first movie I remember finding so funny, I had to go back and see it a second time at the show, but had to rewatch it because it's been 24 years since saw it. Still love it. And yeah, actually, I haven't seen it in a while too, but when I was like, yeah, I remember loving the hell out of this movie. I remember I had rented it on VHS, loved it, and then I went and bought it like almost the next day. I was a fan of this movie, and it was because of Bill. So that makes sense.
Man, Bill's not here because blah blah blah. Damn it, Bill!
No, he had legitimate reasons.
Bill would have kicked me off the show for not liking very bad movies. So, okay.
So all right, we're gonna go ahead and do our recap on our list. So, Lisa, just quickly redo your 5 through 1 really quickly.
5 through 1. Number 5 is Virtuosity. Number 4 is The Visit. Number 3, Volcano. Number 2, The Village. And number 1, Vertigo.
All right, my number 5 was Very Bad Things. My number 4 was a tie between Venom and Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Number 3 was Videodrome. Number 2 was VHS. And my number 1 was VHS 2. Pete.
All right, number 5 was Vampire Hunter D. Number 4 was V is for Vendetta. Number 3 is Venom. Number 2 is Very Bad Things. And number 1 was Wes Craven's very own Vampire in Brooklyn.
Rob.
All right, my number 5 was Vaginas in Space. Wait, oh, sorry, wrong film. Vampires suck. Number 4, Victor Frankenstein. Number 3, V for Vendetta. Number 2, A Very Heralding Kumar Christmas. And number 1, Vampire Hunter D.
And Bill's list was number 5, Vivarium. I think I'm saying that right. Yes, number 4, The Vanished. Number 3, Vacation. Number 2, National Lampoon's Vacation. And number 1 is A Very Bad Things. All right, that's going to be our show. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Lisa, you're a lot of fun.
Thank you.
You're a lot of fun, as always.
But get the hell out of here.
You're always fun to talk to.
Dear God.
You're always, despite your wrong opinions about very fun movies from the 90s, just for that. Just for that, I'm putting that on the That's the Bomb Yo list. I'm going to go put that on there right now.
That's fine, because you won't have me on that episode.
with our guest, Lisa. No, but Lisa, thank you again. As I mentioned, she is a host of several Rabbit Hole shows. She's a co-host on Whatever with Jason Soto with Rob and I. She co-hosts me with me on Between the Scares, and she hosts a show with her brother Mark called The Sip List. All those can be found over at rabbitholepodcast.com. So far, this ending has not gone off the rails like it normally does, because everyone just wants to scream shit at the last second, and I don't know why. It just happens. Everyone does it. Pete's about to do it right now. Do it, Pete.
If you have to go for pee, go pee. You know, you get it. Run pee.
All right,
that's gonna do it. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you later.
I'll see y'all later.
Copyright 2022. Rabbit Hole Podcasts, rabbitholepodcasts.com.